This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Way on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, taking you around the globe, one country at a time. Tonight we have me, Dean, and Damien. Unsurprisingly, for a show focused on international current affairs, the rest of the team is out of the country. Paul's in the UK, Matt's in Vietnam.
And guess where Sarah's off to?
En route to Antarctica.
How did you know?
Well, you know, it's pretty exciting. It's the sort of thing that you do tend to tell people about. So she'll be there for a couple of months, actually. So tonight's show is in the same vein. We're covering it all. The International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, ILGA, recently released a fascinating report titled The Personal and the Political, Attitudes to LGBTI People Around the World.
The report is the largest investigation of attitudes towards LGBTI people around the world ever conducted. 96,000 odd online individuals in 65 countries, including countries with very little focus on LGBTI rights, such as Algeria, Jamaica, and the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. To discuss this fascinating report in greater detail tonight, we will speak with Angus Carroll, co-author of The Personal and the Political, Attitudes of the LGBTI People Around the World. Here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
What we get here, whether it's rural or whether it's city, or whether it's younger or whether it's middle-aged or older, it makes little difference in a sense, because what we are getting is, for the first time, a pretty concise snapshot of attitude.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities, from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Tonight for Worldwide Wrap, you may remember that about this time last week there was a little election in the United States. It was a bit of a surprise, so not what we were really expecting. In the sense that, you know, I think most of us were under the impression, based on the media, that Hillary Clinton was going to win. That actually hasn't happened, as we all know.
No. I've got to say, I was one of those people that were a little surprised. I was like, what's this stuff in my inbox? This can't be true. But alas, here we are.
And here we are. That's a good way of putting it. Now, there's been a lot of coverage over the last week or so about basically what's been going on with Donald Trump and the various crazy promises that he made while he was campaigning, and how much of those promises are actually going to come true. Is he going to be more pragmatic? Is he going to be just, you know, is he going to, basically, was he just playing to the audience, so to speak? We're going to focus tonight on Worldwide Wrap on his incumbent vice president. That's Mike Pence. Now, Mike Pence was the 50th governor of Indiana, and he assumed office in January 2013. Mike Pence is, if you could describe Donald Trump as something of a political opportunist who was happy to hang with evangelicals in order to get that vote and in order to win the Electoral College and become president of the United States, Mike Pence, on the other hand, is a true believer. He's been described as the most homophobic politician to enter the White House in recent history. So, or Admiral House, which is where vice president lives. So, basically, he's a hardline evangelical who hasn't supported a single LGBT reform across two decades. He has one of the worst records on equality of any president or vice president in recent memory, if not ever, really. In some ways, his record is even worse because it's contemporary. If you're looking back at someone from like 50 years ago, you can make some allowances based on what people thought back then.
So the only good thing I can see coming out of this is it kind of makes Trump look a little bit more modern, or, you know, not so conservative, just by comparison.
Let me count the ways. So, when it comes to marriage equality, he opposes Supreme Court's nationwide marriage equality ruling. So
he what? He opposes it.
Oh, he opposed it. Yeah, he wants it repealed.
He opposed it. Oh, yeah. So he's actively working at getting that rescinded.
He would like that to happen, yes. That's on his wish list. Mm-hmm. So there was a Defence of Marriage Act called DOMA, which barred legally married same-sex couples from having their marriages recognised by the federal government. It was ruled unconstitutional, and he urged that they needed to amend the state of Indiana's constitution to outlaw marriage equality. While he was in Congress, he voted against the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. As governor, his right to discriminate bill could have allowed businesses to discriminate and deny services to LGBTIQ people because of who they are or who they love. He opposed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which is going way back when Bill Clinton was president. So you could be gay in the military, you just weren't allowed to say you were gay. The repeal of that meant that gay people could serve openly or LGBT people could openly serve in the military. He opposed that repeal, saying that it would turn the military into a backdrop for social experimentation. As you can imagine, he's not a fan of our trans brethren either. He opposed guidance from the Department of Education that clarified that trans students have a right under Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972 to access bathrooms consistent with their gender identity, saying the federal government has no business getting involved with issues of this nature. Let's move on to hate crimes. He voted against the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, calling it a, and I quote, radical social agenda. Under his leadership, Indiana still lacks a hate crimes law that covers LGBTIQ people. Now let's move on to HIV. You would think that he'd be a bit more supportive of HIV support and AIDS and things like that. He opposes funding to treat HIV unless it was offset by cuts to programs that he claimed, and I quote, celebrate and encourage the types of behaviours that facilitate the spreading of the HIV virus. He instead...
That's too much, Dean.
Yeah.
Celebrate and encourage the types of behaviours that facilitate the spreading of the HIV virus.
But wait, there's more. He instead preferred funding harmful conversion therapy programs. You can pray the gay away. That would seek to change sexual behaviour. He also dragged his feet on supporting a needle exchange program in Indiana to combat an HIV outbreak that was later deemed preventable due to his moral opposition to needle exchange programs. On top of that, he also doesn't believe in evolution or climate change. And if you're a woman, that body, you're lucky you're allowed to wash it in the shower, as far as he's concerned. It belongs to men.
So the good news is this guy is not President of the United States of the America. He's only Vice President.
The good thing is that we're... Well, the good thing is that he's Vice President. The bad thing is that we're one... Donald Trump chokes on one overly buttery lobster tail in the next few years, and he could be our President.
Goodness me.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Tonight we're talking to Angus Carroll, who's the co-author of the amazing report that we're discussing tonight, which is The Personal and the Political Attitudes to LGBTI People Around the World. Now, we thought we'd start off by explaining who ILGA are. Now, ILGA, which stands for the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, ILGA for short, it's a world federation of national and local organisations dedicated to achieving equal rights for LGBTI people. So it's an umbrella organisation of more than 1,100 member organisations in six different regions, including Pan-Africa, Asia, Europe, Latin America and the Caribbean, North America and Oceania.
And that's something that really makes ILGA a little bit different from other community organisations, I guess, is that they're, like you said, they're a federation, so that they're not... independent. They're not a bunch of people that just got together. They are actually representing those 1,100 member organisations. So they're like a conduit, if you like, a funnel for LGBTI organisations around the world.
Absolutely. A lot of the time on this show, we'll speak to people, like one-off organisations in countries where there's very little support and they have very little in the way of resources. ILGA is in many ways the opposite. It was established in 1978. They enjoy consultative status at the UN. They publish an annual world report and a map on legislation which criminalises or protects people on the basis of their sexual orientation and whether it recognises our relationships. Now, they're currently funded by several governments, like the wealthy ones, Sweden, Finland, Norway, the Netherlands, and also some private foundations. They've got a budget of 1 million euros a year. Five staff members based in the head office in Geneva, swish, and one staff member in Africa, two in Latin America and the Caribbean, and one in Asia. And it's all about working for the equality of us and our community through and liberation from all forms of discrimination. So they seek to achieve this aim through the worldwide cooperation and mutual support of their members. And they've released in October the personal and political attitudes to LGBTI people around the world. This is a fascinating report. It's downloadable at their website, ILGA.org. Absolutely amazing. 60 pages of facts and figures. We thought about the show just being Damien and I literally sitting here flicking through the report going, wow. Really? Can you believe it? But we figured that, you know, that wouldn't be all that convenient for the listeners.
Hi, this is André Duplessis from the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, speaking from Geneva on the World Wide Wave.
Angus Carroll is the co-author of ILGA's report, The Personal and the Political, Attitudes to LGBTI People Around the World. This is the largest investigation of attitudes towards LGBTI people around the world ever conducted, with 96,000-odd online individuals in 65 countries, including Saudi Arabia and Iraq. We started off by asking Angus how ILGA managed to get that many responses.
Yes, well, I mean, the methodology of this survey instrument, the actual technology, is an unusual one, and it is a Canadian company that have created their own copyrighted method, which is getting straight to digital devices. So when somebody, I mean, and I won't in great detail, but essentially when somebody makes an error on their own computer or on their own telephone, when they are actually searching for something, this actually goes into free space, if you like. It goes into random space, which is non-copyrighted. And so this technology is actually able to recognize where error has been made on any digital device, and it can then target a survey to that device. It's called the Random Domain Intercept Technology, or DIT. So random domain, it basically something goes wrong for you. So in other words, you get a 404 message back, you know, an access denied, or you misspell a search term. That when the computer asks you, did you mean, and gives you an alternative to what you might have meant. So you wrote in Australia rather than Australia. It'll say, did you mean Australia? But in that moment where you wrote Australia, that error goes out into the random universe, if you like, and that's where we can pick it up. See, that enables us to send it's an encrypted survey, very secure, that will come down the line to the digital device and say, would you like to take a survey? So it's really interesting, that's the pickup, because we get between a 5 to 10% pickup, which is incredibly high. And it really surprises me that it is so high. So this differs then from when you go to a panel of people. If you're a polling company, one way that people get information on, like LGBT people, for example, attitudes to LGBT people, is to get a panel of 100 people together and to ask them questions. And there are certain weaknesses within that methodology that emerge. For example, what's called like a herd mentality. People will tend to, even if they mightn't agree, they'll tend to agree with what everybody else is agreeing with when you're in a group of people. So there's just weaknesses to every methodology.
I suppose the problem, if you've got a group of people who have been invited to be there, say like a 100 or so people that you can, you know, ask the question of, the issue with that is you could get very polarized views, because some people are there to really push a barrow in one direction or the other.
That's right. I mean, you just don't know what you're getting. And polarized views are representative. There's no doubt about that. And if there's only three people in that 100 people who are polarized, or heavily polarized with an agenda, as you say, then that maybe is reflective of how it is in the world. But these things are often incentivized. You know, somebody is paid to be there. I'm not thrashing that as a methodology. I'm just saying that's a different methodology. What we're able to do is go to hostile countries, like, as you said, Iraq or Egypt or other places where public discourse and public dialogue on LGBT issues is highly legislated against and highly contained. People are not free to generally give their opinions on these issues out loud And so this is a very private methodology, and therefore it allows people to give their responses as they want.
You're on Joy on Worldwide Wave, going around the world one country at a time. We've got more with Angus Carroll from ILGA coming up, including further detail on the minutia of the report.
Hi everyone, my name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You are listening to Worldwide Wave. Lots of love to everyone at Joy 94.9.
Damien, did you know that 47% of people in Algeria strongly agree that gender is assigned at birth and always fixed?
I had no idea.
Well, neither did I, but when I started reading the personal and political attitudes to LGBTI people around the world, which is the subject of tonight's show, a report by ILGA, I learned that and more. Now, Angus Carroll is the co-author of ILGA's report, and we asked Angus about the feedback from Australian survey participants.
You mentioned at the beginning of this that there are 65 countries. There are indeed, but we actually just in this report surveyed only 53, because in the 53 we got over 700 respondents. So, for example, we were in Fiji and in Papua New Guinea. We put the survey into those territories, but we didn't achieve over 700 answers in the time frame that we were in the field for. So in Australia, for example, we got 3,200 responses. So in this report, we just speak about Oceania, and we're actually only speaking about Australia and New Zealand. And we're not speaking about many of the other countries, some of which are criminalising of same-sex sexual relations, for example.
The actual survey ran for 2 months, I understand.
No, we were in the field for about 6 weeks, between 4 and 6 weeks in different territories. So that's when we're actually in the field. So you basically set, that's where the costs come in. You calibrate the technology and you set it up. And then for every day, that's where your costs are. And so, yeah, we're in the field for 4 to 6 weeks. What's really interesting is this thing can be targeted. For example, you could just go to Melbourne or you could just go to the southern suburbs of Melbourne. If you can stay in the field long enough in the southern suburbs of Melbourne, you can get a really interesting overview of what's going on of attitudes to LGBTI people in that region only. So we do it at country region, we do it rural and city. So we have a listing under each country of where we've got responses from and how many. And then we weight it. I mean, obviously, these kinds of digital technologies are more favoured or more known by younger people. But, and so one would wonder, is this survey actually a survey of younger people? And in fact, we have weighted it to census. So we're going through the different age groups between 18 and 65 plus.
It's very broad. I mean, when you look at the nature of the survey, I mean, there are countries like, say, Romania, which have a mostly rural population. Then you've got a country like, say, Singapore, which has, as you can imagine, a completely urban population. How much useful information can you draw from such a broad survey?
You know, well, this is a really big question, a really good question. And the very basic response I give to that is that we are creating an evidence base of actual attitudes. What we have had so far in the world is very little actual documentation, both of LGBTI situations and of attitudes to LGBTI people. What we get here, whether it's rural or whether it's city or whether it's younger or whether it's middle-aged or older, it makes little difference in a sense, because what we are getting is, for the first time, a pretty concise snapshot of attitudes. We find in African and Asian states particularly that the vehicles of that being LGBT, well, being LGB, is a Western phenomenon, for example. This is just an import of, you know, evil homosexuality into our country kind of rhetoric. And then we find that, let's say, for example, in some countries, only 31% of the population believe that same-sex desire is a Western import. That really answers the rhetoric of the political, you know, of the politics, which generally just targets LGBT people because they're an easy target. So when there is political upheaval, for example, in a country or elections coming, you often find the backlash against LGBT people.
Nigeria, for example.
Not so. Nigeria is an excellent example, actually. I'll say why. I'm just maybe segue into a different question around marriage, because you know, marriage issues in Australia and New Zealand and in America and in Europe, the issues of same-sex marriage, for example, are really important indicators of our progress within societies. However, in Asia and Africa, the question of relationships and same-sex marriage is not on the agenda. People are fighting for their lives much more. They're fighting for non-discrimination and non-violence. They're fighting for protection and inclusion in society. They're fighting for NGO recognition, just to be allowed to actually organize and lobby. So what we find is that countries like Nigeria, in the end of 2013, early 2014, made a new piece of legislation which is called the Same-Sex Marriage Bracket Prohibition Act. So Same-Sex Marriage Prohibition Act. And if you just think of the logic of that, Same-Sex Marriage Prohibition Act, there is no such thing as same-sex marriage in Nigeria, so how on earth can you legally prohibit it? But actually what this was a legal vehicle preempting. It was a preemptive strike against any possible advocacy by LGBT activists in case they went for marriage, would begin to call for civil partnership, etc., etc., etc. They have created a legal vehicle whereby that kind of advocacy has been preempted. So Nigeria is a particularly nasty example of how that works.
It's actually very similar to what our Prime Minister did in Australia in 2004. So he brought in legislation that that specified that marriage was only between a man and a woman. And there's a preamble that needs to be read at every single wedding that actually clarifies that, whether the people getting married agree with that or not. Effectively politicising marriage. But this was back in 2004 because there are rumblings about same-sex marriage coming out of the United States.
Absolutely. And actually in many of the states, in Ireland, we have a similar situation. We had a court case that was initiated in 2003 for recognition of a marriage of Irish citizens done abroad. What then happened was that in 2004, a piece of legislation was suddenly enacted, which for the first time defined marriage between a man and a woman. Therefore, when the case came up in 2006, the judge relied on the existing legislation, even though that legislation had been enacted after the court case had been initiated. So there's all sorts of legal vehicles that get put into place. And again, exactly as you say, in Australia and also in the States, this is a huge issue in the States, across individual American states, where these preemptive strikes were put in. The one in Nigeria is just particularly nasty. You know, it not only targets marriage, but it also targets activism, organizing together. You know, the value of this thing, which is an evidence, a body of evidence that activists and advocates can utilize, can triangulate with their other data and utilize this in front of their own policymakers, in front of their own governments, in the international spaces, at the United Nations, and at the regional levels, where policymaking and lawmaking is being developed.
This is a very pioneering survey. Has this ever been done before at such a scale?
Yes, there's a happiness index around gay men that was done, I think, about 120 countries, and that looked at some issues about happiness of gay men. But that was gay men only. Certainly, what's incredibly important for this is actually we have in the Western world, we have quite a bit of data about LGB people, but we have very little data about T people and even far less data about intersex persons or persons, you know, on the issues of sex characteristics. I think this is incredibly important that this is getting the trans issues in this report get very equal weight to LGB issues, the sexual orientation issues.
We're speaking on World Intersex Day, so it's great that you've raised that. The data shows that there really isn't wide awareness of issues relating to sex characteristics in many societies, and 38% of respondents had no opinion on whether children whose sex characteristics are unclear at birth should be surgically assigned a gender by medical professionals, which is quite disturbing, I think, just the sheer number of people who are having their gender decided by a doctor on, I don't know, parents' wishes?
It's been happening forever. You know, this is a possibility. The point about intersex, so we're on the 20th Intersex Awareness Day. It is really alarming. the lack of discourse, lack of discussion about this particular issue of how children are sexed without their parents' consent by medical professionals. And this is something that it has got so little attention and even more has so little understanding. So we even noticed that in this survey, the people just didn't know what intersex meant. Many people thought intersex meant kind of like, and we could tell that by the responses, meant bisexual, you know. And so there's just such an amount of education required here.
Angus Carroll, the co-author of ILGA's report, The Personal and the Political Attitudes to LGBTI People Around the World. You are, of course, on World Wide Wave with Dean and Damien. What did you think of that, Damien?
I'm speechless, you know, from what Angus had to say, and I've just been leafing through the report myself during that segment and having a look at some of the questions. And to give you guys an idea of, you know, it sounds horrible reading a 60-page report, but it's actually in the format of a very simple question and then responses along the lines of like strongly agree, somewhat agree, neither, somewhat disagree, strongly disagree, and broken down by region and then by country.
Yeah, even a bear of very little brain like me, who just sits here to push buttons and stuff like that so that we can hear ourselves on radio, even I was able to read it and understand it. I was really impressed.
So, yeah, there's not actually a lot of words. It's pretty much a bunch of numbers. But just leafing through, it's some really surprising, I suppose, trends come out of that. And let's see if I can find one to illustrate what I mean.
We were talking earlier about the number of people who would be happy to have a neighbour that was openly gay.
Yeah, so the questions were pretty cool. Actually, this one as well.
See what I mean, listeners? What I was saying before about how literally we could just sit here in the studio flicking through the report going, oh, goodness.
We could have turned this into listener bingo and said, now, SMS your responses to who was the most uncomfortable in the world with the question, how would you feel if your neighbour were gay or lesbian?
Somewhere in the Middle East?
Yes.
I've been doing this show for a few years now, so that's kind of a trick question.
And what about who had the highest response for no concern if their neighbour were gay or lesbian?
Northern Europe?
No.
Ba-bong. Ba-bong. Which country was it?
It was in South America.
Oh, which one?
Argentina.
Interesting.
So they came in at 88%. Yeah, it's quite interesting. And some of the other ones which we'll speak to after this break were the comparisons between places that we are not surprised by, like, you know, the Middle East or parts of Africa. When you compare their responses to Australia, Australia is often, you know, we already know the bad places, and so we already know what to expect. But sometimes the Australian response is probably a little different to what you or I might have imagined.
It is indeed a fascinating document. And coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about the more positive aspects of the report.
Hi, this is Tara from the Fiji Women's Rights Movement on the World Wide Wave.
Tonight, we are looking at an ILGA report released recently, The Personal and the Political Attitudes to the LGBTI People Around the World. Now, in the context of 2016, which has been a very challenging year for the LGBTI community, 67%, that's pretty major, of the world strongly or somewhat agreed that human rights should be applied to everyone regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. We asked Angus if that was a result he expected, because I was certainly surprised by it.
No, it so was not an outcome that I was expecting. I was expecting a much lower response to that, and that was an exceedingly happy surprise. Also, the question about your neighbour, if your neighbour was LGB or if your neighbour was T. Those three questions, so if your neighbour is LGB, if your neighbour is trans, and also are sexual orientation and gender identity and expression a part of the human rights family? So what we have at the United Nations level is a vast, really, really horrible debate that's been going on for more than a decade, very direct debate, that says over 50 states repeatedly say in public forum, human rights forum at the United Nations, that sexual orientation and gender identity are not a part of the human rights architecture that the world states agreed under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So this is what they say, that this is a demand for new rights, or this is gay rights, that these are a special set of rights that they never agreed to. Now, the argument that LGBT activists have been making for some years now is that we're not looking for special rights, new rights, or gay rights. We're looking for the application of existing rights in the world. So if that's freedom of expression, that translates to NGO registration, that your organization can be registered within the state. That's how this kind of stuff translates. So what we found was that many of the countries whose representatives at the United Nations level refuse, mostly on traditional values grounds, which is basically religious grounds, refuse to include sexual orientation, gender identity, we found that their populations do not agree with them. That's what this evidence told us. And that's really amazing and fantastic. So we were not expecting that outcome to be anything like as high as it was, but it actually just speaks to how sensible people are, that they can see that violence and discrimination based upon really anything, including sexual orientation, gender identity, is just not okay. That's what this finding told us.
That's Angus Carroll there from ILGA, speaking about the personal and political attitudes to LGBTI people around the world. Now, I spoke to Angus for a bit under an hour, so that's really only a small part of what we talked about. So at some point in the future, we will probably have another show where we actually cover a little bit more about what he was speaking about. It was a fascinating interview.
Do yourself a favour, get online and download the report for yourself. It is a very interesting read. Just picking up there on, I guess, one of the key things that he brought up was the response for should human rights be applied to everyone, regardless of whom they feel attracted to or the gender they identify with, was very high across the world. But it seems that in some minds, sexual identity or sexuality, gender identity and sexuality kind of fall outside that. And I'm not really sure what the rationale is, because human rights are human rights. And if you're human, then that's you. To put it in context, in Africa, they strongly agree for human rights should be applied to everyone, regardless of who they're attracted to, was up in the 60s, Kenya 64, South Africa 68, a little bit lower in Zimbabwe 42, Nigeria 55, which compares quite similarly with strongly agree in Australia only being 60%. So there's stuff all difference there. Some of the other ones where there was a bit of a surprise was looking at same-sex desire is a Western world phenomenon. The highest strongly agree came in at 43%, and that was Pakistan. Well, what I found surprising was that Australia had strongly agree at 9%. How do you feel about that, Dean? Do you think that's a little high, perhaps?
There are so many surprises in this report. I urge everyone to go to ILGA.org and download it. Very easy to read. It's well worth it.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Costa Gavrilidis, the president of Accept LGBT Cyprus, and you're on the World Wide Wave.
And would you believe it? We've come to the end of another show. We'd like to send out our big thanks to Angus Carroll, co-author of The Personal and the Political Attitudes to LGBTI People Around the World. For ILGA, you can get online and have a look at that report yourself at www.ilga.org. Big thanks also to our podcaster, Mark, for working away tirelessly there.
And the wonderful Gordon at the front desk, as always.
Join us next week on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.